right, welcome back to So There I Was. I'm your host again, Travis Womack. And today's guest is none other than Lucas Vellmer, a former Army veteran. Actually, it's a former, it's just your Army veteran, engineer. I don't think it's like former Marine, all that stuff. But welcome to the show, Lucas. I'm glad we could make this work out after many other attempts.
Yeah, no, it's good to be here, finally getting on. So happy to be here, and we'll shoot the shit and tell stories about so no shit there I was.
Yeah, there you go. That's the meaning behind it all. I like to give every guest just kind of a quick little intro on themselves, kind of like, why did you join? When did you join? Kind of what sparked the desire to wear a uniform?
Yeah. Okay, so I joined the Army in 2000. Probably because I didn't have anything else going for me at the time. I mean, I had good education, I had decent grades, but there was no scholarships. I grew up in a small town. My graduating class was like 118, and that was the second largest in the school's history. So yeah, I mean, grew up poor, grew up in a small town, didn't have much going for me. So it was like, okay, well, what am I going to do with my life? Let me go ahead and join the Army. So that's what I did. Left in 2000 after I graduated high school. Did 10 years as an engineer, heavy equipment operator, turned project manager, turned glorified babysitter. Yeah, no, for sure. Three deployments to Iraq. Got tired of really doing a lot of stuff for ourselves and for the Army and not doing a whole lot for the people that we were supposed to be over there helping. So I started looking at a career change. So went and applied for civil affairs, got accepted,
Awesome.
Went to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, did all the training. Ended up being in the AFRICOM battalion and learning how to speak French. So, I definitely blended into all the countries in Africa.
No, that was, for those listening, he's very pale like me.
And then I had a really interesting career turn. So, luck and timing, knowing the right people at the right time. Ended up becoming the branch manager for 3 years up at Fort Knox, working at HRC. And then I got my choice of return assignment and decided to return to Fort Bragg, go work at the proponent, kind of doing some higher level stuff, still in the mix, but trying to put those skills and all that experience I had to good use. Retired in 2021, went right to work as a DA civilian in the proponent.
As I do.
Yes. And got some more good education and training while I was there. And then once I got done with that sort of gig, ended up having to move. So that's why I left the job. And I mistakenly thought that being a GS-12 meant I had a foot in the door to get a job around the DC area. That is not the case.
No, it's a starting point.
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of lessons learned there. I went back to school, finished my degree, and this Customs and Border Protection recruiter job kind of just fell in my lap out of nowhere. It wasn't on USA Jobs. It was a friend of a friend of a friend. Apply, direct hire situation because 30% or more disabled veteran. So I was able to get picked up on direct hire authority.
Skip some lines there, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And so I started working that job last October, and it's become the best job I never knew I could
wanted.
Have.
That's awesome. That's a great that's a great feeling to have whenever you're like, I didn't even think about this, and here you are. So that's awesome. Well, let's go back to the kind of the engineer stuff. So there's the put it together engineer, and there's the take it apart engineer. Which one were you?
Let's see. Well, I guess you
preferred.
would call it the take it apart for the first 5 years. So I was attached to a combat engineer battalion. So I was mostly surrounded by 12 Bravos. So, make things go boom. And then when I moved from Campbell to Fort Richardson, Alaska, it was completely different change of pace, different change of like just job and everything in general. So that was putting things together. A lot of road construction stuff, a lot of laying the foundation for the vertical engineers to actually be able to build up and, across from.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I mean, it was a great job and I loved what I did, but I saw the future of job satisfaction and I was like, I don't think this is it. Even though I had a wildly successful career for my first 10 years.
And so it can be exhausting. I totally understand that. I spent 5 years in the infantry and I went to be a recruiter. And it's what's interesting, it was in my recruiter time, like how much the army changed. Like it was crazy from 08 to 12, like this massive shift. And it wasn't just so much the people or training, it was literally the equipment, you know, because I mean, I remember very well, like we used to keep ANCD, you know, the little black box radio fills, right? You know, they used to just be in
I
the
remember.
drawer of our desk. You're like, oh, here you go, go fill the radio. And no one cared. And then literally in that time, like, recruiters don't get any kind of tactical training. You know, you don't get it. You're not up to speed on the new lasers and thermals and all this stuff. And I crossed over and became an officer, but I showed up to a maintenance platoon, and which was a whole other story itself. But from airborne infantry to that, I was like, this is weird. And they had the I forgot what it is now, the little Palm Pilot thing for radio fields. And it was, you had to have a secret clearance to touch the darn thing. And it was kept in the arms room. I'm like, so you're telling me our primary way to talk is constrained by the three people that have a clearance to hold the darn thing. Like, let's recap here. We have 185 trucks that need a radio fill, and only three people are qualified and allowed to touch them. Great plan. I was going bonkers, you know, and like knowing how to use it, and because you couldn't touch the darn thing, and it just those little things that had changed. And that's just one example of, you know, so I totally understand, like, it's a change can be good. You know, like, I've got to get a different mindset.
No, for sure. You're absolutely right. And so that just reminded me, like, I was advanced when I was at Fort Campbell. So I learned all about the ANCD, how to put the fill in, how to take the fill out, how to do a whole bunch of stuff with the ASIPS radio. But then you fast forward to like 2006, maybe 2009. It's probably 2009. We've gone from the ASIPS radio to what was it,
The
the
Harris.
Thames, and then the Harris. Like I had the black radios first, and then I had the Harris radios, and those things were super complex. So it's like you're having to learn all this stuff on the fly because what you have back in the rear is not what you have
For
forward,
not even close,
right?
yeah.
So it's all like steep vertical learning curve, and they're like, "Oh, okay, you'll just learn all about this stuff during Riptoa." Really? Yeah,
My
because
three
that's
hours
exactly what
of
doesn't
drinking a
happen.
Rip It, literally, and getting towed out. That's why it's called Riptoa. So, yeah, I hit, we were on the surge, like we're an airborne infantry unit, and we just got done doing a whole bunch of air assault insurgents and stuff. It was great, and we got flipped around for the surge, and we hit the ground in North Baghdad, and there's like just this whole field of Humvees and other stuff, and we're like, the crap is that for? And they're like, this is for y'all. We're like, you do know we're going to break all of this. Like, that's all we are good at is breaking stuff. And you give us trucks, and we're going to break every single one of them. And they, you know, the Army had just finished its realignment in 2006, you know, so it's the back end of that. And we're like, who are these guys? Like, that's the BSB. We're like, the what? What are you talking about? You know, we never had any clue. And they're like, you think you do maintenance and you have to go to the motor pool. And we're like, we have parachutes. Like, what the crap are you talking about? And like, all of a sudden now here I am changing oil. And I mean, we were so mad. It was like this, the friction of like, y'all could have done this a little bit more of a phase in instead of like on the fly. And we had these, you know, the motor pool chief is like, come, hey, Sergeant Womack, your vehicle says it's due for an oil change. I'm like, y'all get to that probably never. Like I will break this truck and drive it off a bridge before we get time to do that. We're just not gonna do it, man. Like we're doing like 3 3-hour ops a day. Like I'm not wasting my downtime from watching all 10 seasons of Friends to come change the oil.
No, Yep, I get it. Yeah, like the fact that some of that stuff still continued on was kind of impressive and really annoying at the same time. Just doing AOAP samples in
Oh yeah.
2005, like
Gosh.
what a,
Yeah.
really?
We're mailing oil
Wow.
and vials. We still do this? We have
Yeah,
these things
exactly.
called computers. It's amazing technology.
Yeah.
So I gotta
Yeah.
ask you though about being in civil affairs, because I have to tell you a funny story real quick.
Yeah.
So in my whole career, I've had a civil affairs do anything with us one time ever. And it was like 2.5 hours. And we had a Humvee, we had a little Humvee trailer. And in the back of it was like, I don't know, a ton of bags of rice or these like saran wrapped, like trays of food things. It was, I don't know what
Sure.
it's nasty. But anyways, it was all there. And it was, we had this little, you know, the cover on it and stuff. It was full of crap. And we're driving and like our job is to go kill bad guys, you know? And these two civil fair guys followed us along on there at a gunner, you know, in their truck and they had this loudspeaker thing. And we didn't drive slow ever. Like, we're like, if you drive slow, you're an easy target. If you drive fast,
Yep.
you're a hard target. So we're like hauling butt down Route One, you
Yeah.
know, Route Tampa for those that remember the road name, you know. But we're zigzagging and bumping cars. Like, we don't slow down. That's how you
Right.
get hit. And we get there, and the civil affairs guys, the sergeant's like, "Can y'all not run every car off the road? Like, y'all hit 23 of them." And we're like, "They go too slow, you know." And then we're like, you know, when you bring out food, it's like they're like ants that swarm your
Yep.
vehicles. And for us, we're like, this is super uncomfortable.
Yep.
And we're going to kind of a half hostile, trying to be nice, trying to be, don't kill them all, and like this give and take. And
Yeah.
then we take contact. And the civil affairs guys that was with us was not ready for our response. Cause like we're like turn every gun and just unleashed hell, you know, and we're radioing back, and they're like, "Hey, don't get in a fight and stay in the fight with people that aren't a part of our unit."
Right,
And
right.
because this is, you know, bad TTPs and stuff like that. And so
Yeah.
we had to break contact and go back. And the E4 that was the driver was like, "Y'all are crazy. Y'all are crazy. Y'all just get in trouble." We're like, "Yes, we are very good at getting in trouble." So,
Yeah.
but I'd like to hear about civil affairs. I actually looked at that a long time ago. Between that and PsyOps, you know,
Yeah.
it's like the other wing of, you know, Spec Ops type
Yeah.
stuff, you know, and
Right.
people don't really know what the mission is.
Yeah, so it's interesting because it's kind of evolved, and I could get into all the nerd stuff about the difference between the active component and the reserve component, and
Right.
you know, the mission is the mission, right? You look at an FM, the FM is what the FM is, right? And that's what tells the rest of the army what civil affairs does and what they could realistically expect. Now, how it's employed on the soft side is going to be different than how it's
Oh
employed
gosh, yeah,
on the
night and day.
conventional side,
Yeah.
right? And I think that's where a lot of confusion lies, and there's a lot of consternation between the active component and the reserve component. But I mean, generally speaking, your experience that is very on par with how we try to go about business, but it depends on the environment. So situational awareness, where you're going, what you're doing,
Yeah.
like from the get-go, if that CA element is not integrated into your TTPs, that's failure number one,
Yeah, we didn't know who they
right?
were. They were brand
And
new.
no,
We're like, "Who are
exactly.
you
Like you're
guys?"
just out there just providing security.
Yeah.
There should have been a very good brief ahead of time about
Yeah.
what the mission was, who's got what, what's going to happen
Oh,
if
yeah.
we get into contact, like all that stuff. And if it doesn't happen, then there's failures across the board.
Oh, yeah.
And as things progressed through both fields of operation, things changed, right? Things evolved. We got better at integrating. They got better at integrating. It just.
Well, it never happened before. That's the thing.
Right,
It's like,
right.
I mean, obviously the soft side is a whole different unique, and you're working at the ODAs, and you have a relationship with those guys, you know,
Right.
predominantly, you know, and some you've probably done PT at least with them sometime, you know. And this
Right.
is, you know, the reserve side is obviously getting activated to go attach to active units, and but we'd never done it before. You know,
Yeah.
pre Iraq 03, like when we didn't have time to even get them mobilized to do Desert Storm. You know, they were kind of involved. You know, but that, we just pulled some soft guys for Kosovo and there's another country and my brain just turned off.
Bosnia.
But I was thinking, I was like, there's another one there somewhere. You know, like we just pulled soft guys over to cover down because it's too quick. You know, but this is the first time we've ever had to massively integrate, like, and activate a massive civil affairs. You know, what do they call the battalions or groups or.
Yeah,
You know, whatever.
battalion.
So, and you know, and it's like, and then try to take people, a whole bunch of people from Oklahoma and Nebraska. I don't know where they're even at, but you know, and then you're trying to bring them together at Fort Bragg for a massive training prep up, which is who knows how long. And then you spread them out all across Iraq, you know, and Iraq's pretty big, you know, and so it's a communication nightmare.
No, it absolutely is. It's a huge logistical nightmare, and it let alone the fact that you're trying to integrate all of these reserve people into your unit, but they just, most of them just came together themselves for,
Months ago.
the prep. Right. So you get a bunch of people who have never worked together anyways, and maybe have done drill once or twice, and who knows what they got done. So yeah, it's an absolute logistical nightmare to put all those pieces together and make it work. And the fact
That's
that
the
you
cool part.
guys,
It worked.
it did,
I mean,
right? The fact that you
to a
guys made
point,
it there,
you know.
it and were able to execute the mission, albeit haphazardly, right? It's not ideal, but the fact that you were able to make it happen speaks volumes to the professionalism across the board on all parts.
Yeah,
So, I mean, I can't.
there was a brief on if we take contact with, so we will shoot back. I was like, and we told them like, don't shoot. Y'all just stay in the truck, like defend yourself, but like don't, like this is our job. Like we will protect you and we will get y'all back. And so there was a brief to make that clear, but it was just kind of a, oh crap, this actually happened. You know, and it was an interesting thing because you know you never know what you're going to get involved in. I mean, working with them at the time was it mid-teens, I think, was going on at the same time, and same thing, you're kind of just throwing people together really quick, and they reactivated, you know, call people back, that were a lot of those mid-teens, and it was an interesting, and they were heavily involved with getting training from civil affairs because that's kind of what their job fell under that umbrella.
No, for sure. It evolved as both theaters of operation kind of went on, right? What we did in Afghanistan circa 2012 was absolutely different than how those teams were integrating even in 2009. And so, as the missions evolved, as the theaters of operation evolved, so too did our TTPs and what we did and how we integrated. You go from being that what we thought was going to be a soft CA element and integrating with ODAs to now we're integrating with SEAL teams, with MARSOC teams, with ODAs, right? So it was, you just had to figure out what it was that they were going to do and try to do your best to integrate as a completely different service, let alone, different styles of mission and everything else. So
Well, that was what is it, my years are going to be off on this, and someone's going to send me a message and be like, "You're an idiot." That's okay. I've been called worse, you know. But like the J of JSOC, like, existed as a command element only as a term for a long time until 6, 7, 8, you know, 09 window, where it became this like, no, we legitimately have to be joint or this won't work. You know, and it's really interesting to see the shift of all those communities, you know, and to, you know, and I mean, obviously the Army has SOAR, and so like it's like I call it the hub, because between Rangers and MARSOC and SEALs and Delta and you know, Green Berets and stuff, all those teams, like they all use one aviation unit, you know, and so like it's like the coolest hub of information, you know, and everybody's like, oh, you know that guy, oh man, Dave's the best, you know, whatever, and they all know it, so they have this common connection with their ride. And it's kind of, it's really unique to talk to any of those guys. And I got to work with one. I was at the Pentagon, one of the aviators there, and he was like the coolest dude ever. He had the best stories.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I was like, where? I said, I looked up your awards, and you got two silver stars, and they pretty much say you came to work and done good. You know, he's like, yeah. I was like, one of them just happens to be the day we killed Bin Laden. You know, he's like, oh, it's just a weird quit. I'm like, I'm not stupid. You know, it's like, yeah, it's a busy night. Like, of course it was. You jerk. Like, you're like so humble about it. Like, here you are, the guy that flew the pickup after they crashed the second helicopter. He's the guy that flew the Chinook, like, to get the rest
Oh
of the team
yeah.
out. You know, I'm like, kind of a big deal, dude.
No big deal. Like I was just a pilot, man. It's no big deal.
You talk about that like you were happy that I got wild berry Skittles in your MRE. Like, it's not a,
It's interesting, right? The different mindset between most of the 160th aviators that I've run into, right? The actual pilots and your other pilots, pick your branch, right? Usually you get the arrogance and everything else, but I don't know that I've really talked to any of those 160th pilots that are
Chill.
super arrogant. You know, they're typically very chill and just relaxed and like, hey, you know, whatever it is, what it is, and like, I'm not gonna glorify what I've done.
So the guy, and I can't remember his name, too many head injuries, the guy at the Medal of Honor, obviously, you know, he's standing there, the memes that came from him, like, damn it, y'all made me put on my full uniform for this. Now they know that I exist. They're not supposed to know that CW5s actually exist.
Right, exactly.
And I came to work in uniform and I shaved. It's like, this is too many check the blocks at one time. Get rid of my reputation. Oh, that's crazy. So I gotta ask, because you gave a timeline there though, and your career is bookended by two pretty catastrophic events between your a year or less in and 9/11 happens, and then you're going through retirement during COVID. So I gotta hear about,
Oh
you
my
have the worst
God.
bookends of a career.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so God. 9/11, that whole thing, right? So I'll start there just because it's an interesting story to begin with. So I graduated air assault school at the Sabalaski Air Assault School there in Fort Campbell on September 13th, 2001.
Okay, so you're doing rehearsals.
So,
Got it.
and there we are that morning, and it was interesting. Got up normal, went and did PT, and then they give us an hour to go change and stuff. So, I lived in the barracks. I went, got changed. I went down to the dining facility. And there was something on the TV, right? I thought it was just a movie playing. I'm just sitting there, like scarfing my breakfast down because I got about 15 minutes before I've actually got to
You're a
go down there.
candidate.
Yeah,
So.
right, exactly. And I'm like, oh, this is weird. I've never seen this movie before. I wonder what it is. Like, just nothing, no idea what's actually happening, that this is actually the
Is
news
Campbell East
news.
Coast time or is it Central? I know it's right around the
It
border.
is, oh my God.
It's half
Fort
and half, isn't
Campbell
it?
is it's yes, it's half and half. It's split in the middle. So it's half Kentucky, half Tennessee. I think we were on Central Time, if I
So you're an
remember
hour behind on
correctly.
TVs in a sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
That,
yeah.
because I know it's super weird. I've never been there, but
Yeah, so it's like I don't know, what, 8 o'clock in the morning, right? So it's
8:15 in the morning, the planes were hitting,
right.
so.
Yeah, so I'm right there. And that's why the time, like it is. It messes with me all the time because they're like, oh, the plane struck the first tower at this time. And I'm like, it was earlier. Like I was eating chow. How did, oh, that's right, Central Time. Yeah. So, anyways, so I rush, get back, and we're about to start right after formation. And then that's when they drop the news, the instructors drop the news of what happened. And so everything changed. We didn't do rappelling out of the helicopter because all of the aviation assets were
Grounded.
grounded except for attack helicopters. When we did the 12-mile road march, it used to be all the way out, 6 miles out and 6 miles back, but that made you had to go out one of the gates to do it.
Certainly the gates.
So instead, we had to do 3 miles out, 3 miles back, 3 miles back out, and 3 miles back, which it kind of
Break it
sucks.
up, yeah.
But what really sucks about that, if anybody's ever been to Fort Campbell, you know, when you go down Range Road and then you make the left on, I'll be damned if I remember the name, but you go down to where the ASP is or was, it's a straight downhill shot to the bottom and then a straight uphill shot right back up to the other
Yes.
side. And you had to do that sucker, you
Yeah,
know,
twice, two complete
multiple
directions.
times.
That sucks.
It absolutely sucked. So, graduation, we had two Kiowas that hovered over our graduation to protect us from I don't know why we were going to get
Yeah.
attacked, but you know, hey, if you wanted to
The
attack my
crowd got
graduates, there
squirrely.
we
It was
are,
over.
man.
That's
And
awesome.
then yeah, so fast forward to 2020, COVID 2021 time frame, and man, so interesting things happened. So we are, let's see, what was that? 2019, I had just PCS'd from Fort Knox to Fort Campbell. And I was going to retire at the end of 2020 slash 2021, right? Clean break, January 1st, right? Decided not to take promotion, declined promotion to retire. Just because the benefit wasn't worth the costs in the long run. Because I was looking at coming from HRC, I knew the people who do the promotion stuff. So I had the conversation. I was on the list. I was the last one on the old slash new promotions that they did where you had an OML, but it was only a selection list. It wasn't the entire OML.
Oh yeah, I was on the team that made that,
Yeah, you guys
I
are awesome. No,
know.
I'm just
I
kidding.
just made the
No, no. So I mean, it was okay. But I am trying to decide how am I going to balance my career, right? So what does my promotion look like? What does my promotion window look like? And then what does the longevity look like? So by the time I would have been promoted,
Was it T7 or 8?
eight.
8, yeah, okay. I
Yeah.
figured. I figured. I was just.
By the time I would have been promoted, it would have been 2021 to 2022. I was looking at being close to end of the exhausting of the list, even though I was in the middle. But we also had that whole E8 fiasco where there were too many E8s in the Army,
Oh, yeah.
and it wasn't, were we going to bust? It was, how bad are we going to bust, and what's Congress going to do about it, type of thing. So anybody who was not in a priority MOS was basically just getting pushed all the way towards the end, and then they were just going to exhaust the list and call it a day. And that's about when it would have happened if I had taken the promotion. So all that said, I was like, okay, it just doesn't make sense for me anymore. Let me go ahead and just drop my retirement. So I did. It's like January 2020 when I dropped my retirement.
Oh, that was about to be close.
And so COVID isn't really a thing. It is, but it's not really. And then my mom dies
Oh,
at the
man.
end of January, like 2 weeks after I dropped my retirement. Just, she was, I don't know. She was born in 65, so.